Though we often think of empathy as synonymous with kindness, that isn't entirely accurate. Empathy is not the same as compassion. At its core, empathy is the ability to understand others' perspectives, what they feel, what they think, what they fear, what they want. That understanding can be wielded in service of a greater good, or it can be exploited. Words from author Michael Ventura in a May 4, 2025 New York Times article entitled "The Dark Side of Empathy." Mr. Ventura goes on to write, "In psychological terms, empathy is not a singular skill. It comes in different forms. As researchers have shown, affective empathy, the ability to feel what others feel, is distinct from cognitive empathy, the ability to understand what others feel. Many people have both. Others, like narcissists, often possess only the latter, if they have empathy at all. And this is where things can get dangerous. Most of you are likely aware that empathy has recently become controversial. It is often valorized by those wishing to reduce the suffering and enhance the flourishing of all beings. These persons often see empathy as a gateway to compassion. Others with a more cynical and transactional worldview have demonized empathy as weakness, rhetorically rejecting empathy while using it tactically. This latter perspective has recently been voiced by and broadcast by particularly prominent figures in technology, media, and politics. Ventura writes that they discredit this vital skill as weakness, yet fine-tune their messaging to trigger precisely the reactions they need from investors, voters, and followers. We've heard the ideological dog whistles. We've witnessed the fear-mongering and the overreach, shrouded in the guise of protecting democracy. Today, I'd like to expand on what Ventura's article stimulated for me, and explore how this relates to Buddhist practice and perspectives, with an eye toward implications for daily life. As Ventura points out in his article, there has recently been widely publicized derision of empathy as naive and a weakness, casting strength as synonymous with domination, suggesting that to care is to lose and to control is to win. Yet, as Ventura also notes, a 2021 study found that employees who report having managers with empathic leadership skills are more likely to be innovative, engaged, and resilient. According to one recent survey, toxic workplace culture, not compensation, is the leading reason for employee turnover. Empathy, applied with ethical integrity, is a driver of performance, not a drag on it. So, how might we cultivate empathy? Particularly affective empathy, the emotional resonance with others that seems particularly linked to compassion and pro-social action. And yet not have this empathic capacity render us vulnerable to media moguls, technology barons, and political actors who would use their cognitive understanding of empathic response to manipulate us and others in service of their own self-focused, sometimes dangerous goals. Further, what role does our Zen practice play in this? In addressing these questions, I'd like to first examine the social and cultural contexts in which empathy arises, and those wherein it can be problematic, even dangerous. In this, it's helpful to recognize how the constructs of narcissism as a personality trait and narcissistic personality disorder, a clinically recognized condition, relate to empathy. The personality trait of narcissism includes exaggerated self-focus, self-promotion, entitlement, vanity and self-aggrandizement, reduced affective empathy, and often increased sensitivity, as well as angry reactivity to negative feedback. Narcissism appears to be particularly prevalent in Western cultures, in which it has increased over recent decades, particularly among adolescents and younger adults. Narcissistic personality disorder is characterized by even greater self-absorption and grandiosity, and expressed superiority, aiming at dominance over others, a keen sensitivity to others' vulnerabilities and their exploitation. And despite such apparently acute cognitive empathy, a relative lack of affective empathy or true emotional resonance. Narcissism is among the malevolent traits of the so-called dark triad, together with psychopathy and Machiavellianism, or as more recently described, the dark tetrad, also including sadism, the taking of pleasure by inflicting pain and suffering in others. As with narcissism, empathy also has multiple components. Awareness of these components can contribute to the cultivation of empathy in the service of compassionate action and decrease vulnerability to manipulation by those who would narcissistically use cognitive empathy to dominate and control. Empathy, as already noted, can be differentiated into affective empathy, feeling what another is feeling, and cognitive empathy, knowing what another is feeling. Those with varying degrees of narcissistic traits may show highly developed cognitive empathy, yet absent or very diminished affective empathy. Compassion differs from empathy in that it involves a deep feeling for and understanding of misery or suffering, with the concomitant desire to promote the alleviation of suffering. Affective empathy, which can be a gateway to compassion, often begins when observing, hearing of, or reading about another's emotional or related experience, and includes what we view as negative, such as fear, sadness, or pain, as well as what is thought of as positive, such as joy, love, and affection. Humans and other animals appear to have evolved the ability to automatically mimic and synchronize emotional expression with others, called automatic perception-action coupling in research literature, enabling spontaneous affective sharing between self and other. Contemporary neurosciences suggest that this automatic perception-action coupling principally relies upon mirror neuron systems in the brain that activate when observing another's action, and those emotion-relevant systems to which these mirror neuron assemblies are connected. This foundation alone, without additional affective empathy components, would result only in emotional contagion, such as observed in toddlers interacting in groups where the distress of one is rapidly transmitted to several others, expressed as empathic overarousal and distress. These additional components, allowing fundamental affective resonance to move to empathic concern and compassion, include self-awareness and self-other differentiation, mental flexibility to adopt the subjective perspective of another, and emotion regulation. With the development in childhood of self-awareness and self-other differentiation, facilitated by mental flexibility and perspective shifting, the person becomes aware that their experience of affective resonance, though like the emotion being experienced by another, is not identical with it. This awareness allows avoidance of getting stuck in a self-focused perspective, wherein it can seem as though, for example, another's distress is one's own distress, evoking associations with distressing events in one's own past, and possibly leading to self-focused efforts to avoid or escape that distress, rather than staying and helping the suffering other. It should be noted here that our Zazen practice can be particularly useful in developing the mental flexibility needed for pliant perspective shifting. Each time in Zazen practice, we fully acknowledge whatever sensation, thought, feeling, etc., is arising. And then, without grasping onto or trying to push away the experience, gently allow attention to return deeply to the body as the experience passes. We are cultivating the stability and pliancy of attention necessary for mental flexibility and perspective shifting. Another affective empathy component for moving toward empathic concern and compassion is emotion regulation. Importantly, this is not suppression of emotional expression, which has been shown to increase rather than decrease the physiological arousal of emotional experience. In contrast, effective emotion regulation involves reappraising the meaning and personal relevance of any event that elicits emotional response. For example, is that driver who cut you off in traffic being intentionally rude and aggressive, or perhaps only trying to quickly get themselves or a sick passenger to medical aid? Again, note how Zazen practice and its generalization to mindfulness in daily life facilitates emotion regulation and equanimity. As we sit still and in silence, we increase the capacity to pause as reactivity arises, resting in the full context of this moment, better able then to notice what allows for a situation and its relevance to us to be more completely appreciated. The cultivation, through practice, of self-awareness, self-other differentiation, mental flexibility in perspective shifting, and emotion regulation benefits not only our capacity for moving from automatic affective resonance to empathic concern and compassion. It also makes us less vulnerable to manipulative efforts of those who would use their cognitive empathy skills to narcissistically control and manipulate. The same self-awareness, Mental flexibility and emotion regulation makes us less likely to react with empathic distress or reactive anger when attempts to manipulate our empathic resonance occur. In this way, we remain more equanimously poised to discerningly and wisely respond rather than react. Frequently recalling our commitment to serve, our ethical vows, and intention to alleviate others' pain and suffering, all part of our Zen practice, help in this regard. Additional protections from the reactivity that others might manipulate. The calmness, equanimity, ethical vows, and capacity for quiet reflection, cultivated by our practice, have never been more needed than now. In a summer 2025 Tricycle magazine article, noted Zen teacher Lewis Richman put it this way: "There are three principles of Bodhisattva life I teach. Keep your mind clear. Be patient. And when you see an opportunity to act, do so without hesitation. Now I am thinking about adding a fourth principle. Live a quiet life. Don't be distracted by things. When the insanities of the world become too noisy and preposterous, remain inwardly calm. If you don't see what you can do, don't do anything. Just wait. Things will change. They always do. Change is the Buddha's first and best teaching. In some ways, change has never been more in the air than now. The aspiring Bodhisattva rides change the way a thrown stone skips over water. Change is our best hope and strongest power." I'll close as I began this talk with a few more words from Ventura's recent New York Times article. If we want better leadership in business, politics, and technology, we need to reclaim empathy as a responsibility. We need to teach it not just as a soft skill, but as a disciplined practice, bound by ethics and rooted in our shared humanity. We must hold leaders accountable, not only for what they say, but also for how and why they seek to understand us. Gassho, now please share your observations and questions.